thank you for joining us again on the WAB Radio Hour here at 101.9 Radio Tacoma. Today we are interviewing fellow worker Devin, who is a member of the local branch of the Tacoma Democratic Socialists of America, talking today about the Crisis Response Initiative with the City of Tacoma. Devin, why don't you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, hi. My name is Devin Rydell Kelly, and I am the membership coordinator with the Tacoma and Pierce County Democratic Socialists of America. I'm an elected officer there starting my fourth term, and a longtime community activist and organizer throughout the Northwest, and I'm excited to be chatting about this really important issue today.
Alrighty. Why don't you go ahead and start off just giving us a brief overview of what a crisis response team looks like. Like, what does it do? Who does it interact with? What does it hope to solve?
Absolutely. And I should be clear, there's a lot of different ways to define crisis response. Mm-hmm. And currently the city is using this term alternative response, which they got from working with some consultants a few years ago. But I want to be really specific about what it is we are talking about. Our campaign is for a fully funded, dispatchable non-police team that can respond to 911 calls and in other situations for folks that are in crisis, for folks that are experiencing mental health crisis themselves, or that can be referred to the 911 calls by others. And this would have a team of folks that are trained professionally in mental health and social work that can be dispatched quickly, that interact with these people instead of police interacting with these people. Mm. And this is really crucial for a number of reasons. Police lack the effective training to interact in those types of situations. They're trained to escalate rather than de-escalate. Police respond slowly in those types of situations and those calls. And it's an opportunity to prevent someone from entering the justice system, the legal system, when they could easily be deferred to resources, mental health or otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. And through this initiative, you're hoping to get funding from the City of Tacoma in order to have this response team fully equipped and fully prepared to take on this task. I know that there's a budget meeting coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the city is voting on the budget. The first vote is on November 15th. The second is on November 22nd. And currently, there is some money budgeted for what they're calling alternative response. However, we feel like it's woefully insufficient and slightly mislabeled, especially given some historical practices by the city.
Well, can you talk more about that?
Absolutely.
What do you mean mislabeled?
Absolutely. So, as I mentioned a couple of years ago, and this is really in response to the uprising for Black Lives, mm-hmm. and crucially around Manuel Manny Ellis locally, the city contracted with an organization to research how many calls could be divertible, what percentage of calls could not go to police. And this organization suggested, it was a matrix group, which included some law enforcement staff, and even they suggested that up to 20% of calls could be easily divertible. And they proposed an 8-person team that is dispatched immediately. And we at the time felt like that was insufficient to cover the needs of community members. However, it would be a start. Since then, the city has not followed through on that recommendation and instead is proposing 2 new folks on the HEAL team, which is the homeless outreach team, used to be called the HOT team, but it was relabeled, 2 new social workers in libraries, and relaunching a pilot program in the fire department called TFD Cares. And TFD Cares was supposed to get funded in the last biennium and got some money set aside, and then it got scuttled. It got canceled before it even launched. And they said it was because no one wanted the jobs. Mm. Our analysis is that they didn't pay enough, they didn't recruit right, and the situation doesn't really allow local folks to get these jobs, get good pay, and serve their community. So what's on the table now is these things that are being called alternative response, but are not. And there's no clear plan to make them dispatchable in the immediate future. So what we want is a much more significant investment, a lot more money, in a dispatchable team that can go out soon. And we don't want the perfect to be in any of the good. We don't have all the solutions. We think budgets are biennial cycles. They take a long time. And if the city doesn't pony up the money and the resources now, it's going to be much harder to do it in the future.
Okay.
It seems to me that one of the things that's happening is there's a setup where it's pitting the police who actually want a crisis response team because they don't want to have all of their time diverted to people dealing with possible drug addiction or mental illness. They would prefer not to have to deal with that. But it's pitting the police against the funding of a crisis response team because we've been told over and over again that we need more police. We're told by the city that we need more police. And so in order to get a decent crisis response team, we would have to take money, proposed money out of the budget for, what is it, 16 or 33 or how many more police?
Yeah, so I think that there's a false dichotomy there that the city's setting up. And they're in a complex situation, right? We have a city manager structure.
Mm-hmm.
We're facing...
Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, we're facing supposedly a budget shortfall, although it hasn't happened yet. And I understand that they need to be mindful about that. We're also facing a situation where there's millions in pay to police overtime. And it's because they're having a hard time recruiting cops, just as they're having a hard time recruiting people to this team,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. And that's a thing that's not often discussed. They say, no one wants to go do this, but no one wants to be a cop either right now. But they're paying millions in overtime to police that could go to folks on this team, that could go to people that have the proper training, that are equipped to deal with these situations, which would free up the time for police to take other calls and have less police overtime. So there'd be budgetary stuff that's good for the city, that's good for police, and that's certainly good for folks in crisis that don't want to deal with the police, that avoid making calls to 911. That often have criminal records for no good reason, and that because of recent legislation, such as the homeless camping ban, are likely to be entering and exiting the justice system more often already anyway.
Actually, going back to the teams themselves, who are the kinds of people that you would hope to be on these kinds of crisis response teams? Licensed counselors, maybe local members of the community, chaplains, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, so that's a great question. We want the composition of these teams to be folks that have mental health training, sufficient mental health training, and social work training, and reflective of the communities of Tacoma.
Mm-hmm.
So reflective of Tacoma's very diverse, often black and brown working class, reflective of the language diversity here, and properly trained and equipped. And there is an underlying issue here around the fact that Pierce County has some of the worst mental health funding and mental health systems in Washington, and Washington
we
has
have someone. Western Washington. I mean, we have Western State.
Yeah.
And what happens is people get released from Western State and they don't necessarily go all the way back to wherever they came from. They stay in the area.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we've got Fort Lewis McChord, which is a very stressful situation.
Yeah.
And so we have a high population of people that are either mentally or emotionally challenged or emotionally ill.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And we just don't have the resources to take care of them, right? So what we are envisioning is a real major investment in the resources to take care of folks. And this is a small part of it. It's an important part of it. But the jobs need to pay well. They need to be connected to credentialing, and if the credentialing doesn't exist, the city and the county and others should try to figure out ways to make it exist.
Mm.
And we hear from people in the community a lot that they want to do these jobs. We, mm-hmm. at our town hall a few weeks ago, we had several community members with the training say, I would do this job in Tacoma if it paid sufficiently, had the right benefits, and felt safe.
I remember that, yeah.
And yep. Those people drive to Seattle to do the job. They do similar work up there. And their system's not perfect, but it's better than here.
Right. Speaking actually about the town hall, one thing I wanted to touch on was there was a discussion at the town hall. Actually, there's a speaker at the town hall recently who worked with a similar program to what we're hoping to make here in Tacoma over in Denver, Colorado. Could you touch on that maybe a little bit?
Yeah. The speaker's name was Roshan Bliss, and he was our keynote. And he is a longtime community organizer, anti-racist, criminal justice advocate. And he helped build that program through going with other folks from Denver and actually researching the CAHOOTS program in Eugene, which has been around for decades and very effective. And they were able, over the course of a few years, with really strong advocacy, identifying different allies and partners in the city and in other community-based organizations, to push for ordnance to create the team. And they got lucky, I think. They were also really determined, and they didn't have as much resistance from the city council or the chief of police or the police union. And here we've heard different folks from different groups blaming each other. The city's blamed the county, the city's blamed the police union, the police is blamed the city. And for whatever reason, it was easier there. But they're eager to collaborate here and help folks and help different cities institute similar programs. And we have said this to city council and city staff. We're hopeful that no matter what launches out of this year, and something will happen, that we're able to really influence it based on what's gone well in other cities.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that there are positive examples out there of these kinds of programs working, because it shows that not only do these programs work in helping people who are experiencing houselessness or some kind of mental or emotional health crisis, but it also shows that there's also the availability of funding for it as well. So I guess on the funding aspect of this initiative, what would that look like? Like, are you planning on taking a portion of the police budget? Would it come from a different kind of, maybe a local tax or something like that?
I'm going to be really flip. I'm going to say, let's take it from the city manager's salary. She makes more than the governor.
Yeah.
She makes a lot.
She makes a lot.
So we've been a little not bold about, you know, saying we want to take money from police for a wide variety of kind of political expediency reasons, although I'm an abolitionist and a lot of us are. We think there's lots of opportunities to fund it. The city has received $120 million in ARPA funds.
Would you explain ARPA funds?
Yeah, the American Rescue Plan Act. And actually now I should step back. I'm not sure if it's 60 or 120 that they received.
Million?
Million. For COVID-related recovery, economic recovery, et cetera. And many municipalities have had a hard time spending it down, including Tacoma. It's now being earmarked, but we called months ago to earmark some of that. We think there would be savings from reduction in force with policing, in that they wouldn't be taking police jobs, but they'd be freeing up police time to do other stuff. And there's a behavioral health tax. We also think that, you know...
Wait a minute. Did you say a behavioral health tax?
Yeah, it got passed a while ago. And
what is a behavioral health tax?
It's a tax. The county collects it now as well, and the city collects, that they're able to use through sales tax to fund...
Okay, so it's a sales tax for behavioral health.
Yes.
They're not going to tax me for being emotionally disturbed.
No.
Okay, you just needed to define that a little bit.
That's great. It's I think it's like 0.1%.
Okay.
It's added to the sales tax.
All right.
We're getting down the weeds, but I think it's important stuff for people to
it
understand.
It is important stuff. People always want to know where the money's going to come from.
And I would say, you know, one thing that we've been centering in the last few weeks since the city manager's budget came out and since city council have been making a lot of statements is that the proof's in the pudding with funding, right? They said back in June that departments would be facing big cuts, that most departments would face about a 9% cut and community safety would face about a 3% cut, whereas policing has increased in this budget by 20%. Again, you know, not saying we want to take that money. They're also raising $3.6 million with a new business excise tax to fund litter cleanup, which is coded language for encampment cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
And everything that they've set aside for all these different quote-unquote alternative models doesn't even get close to what they're covering for litter cleanup.
Right.
So, you know, we say if you're going to have a new excise tax for litter cleanup, some of that money can go to crisis response instead of camp suites, particularly after you just passed really draconian anti-homeless legislation.
Yeah.
Anti-what legislation?
Anti-homeless legislation.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, speaking of the camping ban, I know that that was something that was recently passed by the Tacoma City Council. From what I garnered, it was basically stating that nobody who is currently camping or living on the streets can be outside of a 10-block radius of any particular community resource center, whether that's a houseless shelter.
It's bigger than that. Mm-hmm. It's bigger than that. The city council, in my opinion, passed an absolutely craven, what do you want to call it, statute, whatever. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to come right out and say we're banning camping because that would make them look like bad guys. So they said, you cannot camp... quote, camp, can't set up a tent encampment within 10 blocks of a school, within 10 blocks of a park, within 10 blocks of any body of water, including seasonal creeks, within 10 blocks of public property, and within 10 blocks of any of these resource centers. So what they've virtually done is they've banned any kind of homeless encampment. But they just didn't come right out and say it.
Right. It just makes it extremely hard for anybody to find any available space to set up an encampment.
Yeah.
Which will only lead to more concentrated encampments, which will eventually get swept, and these people are going to be moved around from location,
to location. Same old, same old.
It's just keeping them stuck in the same place, different day.
Yeah,
precisely. And, you know, I think it's not cynical to say that it was a political play by some folks in council to somehow convince themselves that some white rich homeowners in certain neighborhoods would allow permitted campsites or shelters, and that this was a trade-off. And the trade-off is accomplishing maybe some sense of that, but what it's ultimately doing is everything you two are saying, pushing people around, concentrating them in different spaces. And it's not like those same NIMBY homeowners aren't going to be pissed, and business owners. They're still going to be angry. They're still going to be upset at council and whatever new body of council comes in after next elections, because no one's addressing the underlying problems here, right? And we're not saying a crisis response team solves homelessness or solves the underlying problems, but we are saying it's part of an integrated landscape of care and prevention that is way different than turning to state violence to deal with problems.
It's a positive step in the right direction that doesn't involve any kind of unnecessary interaction between law enforcement and the houseless, basically.
I like you bringing us back to the issue, because this is such a large issue, all of this. Because there's so many intersections that it's easy to wander off into the weeds on this one.
Yeah.
But they are all interrelated.
Yeah.
And the city claiming, okay, we've got this new facility that's going to open up November or whatever it was, that houses a tiny fraction of people, that doesn't solve the whole thing. Now, that is good that it's going to be housing first. That's an important step. But it's not nearly big enough. It's pitifully small.
I also liked what you said, Devin, in the fact that this is not exactly a curative decision to make to have these crisis response teams, because it is, like I said, I think it's definitely a positive step in the right direction. It prevents harm. It prevents any further engagement with the penal system unless absolutely necessary. It creates a more integrated system of care, like you said. But I think at the end of the day, yeah, this will not cure homelessness, because homelessness is a crisis of capitalism at its very root. You know, to have an entire class of people that have an extremely difficult time finding housing or food or any kind of reliable health care is something that isn't just an issue here in Tacoma or even in Washington State. It's everywhere in this country. And we're seeing other initiatives like homeless camping bans or preventing people from even being able to feed the homeless in many cities. You know, you can't publicly feed people anymore. You can't feed unhoused people in many larger and even some smaller cities, just because they don't want to see it as incentivizing homelessness is kind of the coded
language.
Well,
you know what? It's going to make criminals of us all. They better build more detention centers, because I'm not going to stop feeding people.
So in terms of the crisis response teams, I guess, what are the next steps to look forward to? I know you had a town hall recently, and I know that these two budget meetings are coming up here in November. What are the next steps in your idea?
Yeah. So the campaign continues no matter what, right? It's very likely that something will come out of the budget. And, you know, I think there's this concern that if you get a thing done, then it feels like you can move on, right? And we're pushing for kind of a maximal, you know, conception of what this looks like now, knowing it will be traded down, and hoping that some folks on council hear us and are willing to offer amendments for a lot more money. Even if they don't think the amendments will win, I think part of the underlying structural problem here is...
Although it passed in the city council, there were, thank goodness, three people who voted against it. They had their own individual reasons, but that gives us an indication that we have some people that we can work with right now.
Yeah. Yes. And I think that forcing split votes in a democratic body is a good thing to understand and see where the leverage points are and where change can happen, right? But yeah, there will be some type of model that's funded. And we want between now and a couple weeks from now to push to make that a maximal model. And then after those decisions are made, we plan to engage extensively with the city on some policy positions we made around staffing, credentialing, really trying to make this a force for good and not a thing that just gets created and, you know, put in a drawer somewhere or not funded as it was in the last biennium. And we believe that, you know, I, speaking as an abolitionist, believe the more we can connect positive creation of new systems, the less we'll rely on the carceral state and police state to address underlying social problems. So we're planning on engaging with other community groups. We have a petition circulating right now. We are trying to grow this coalition. I think one thing some of us are interested in, this is me speaking as myself, not formally for the coalition, is the idea of like a people's budget campaign in the next couple years. Mm-hmm. With the eye towards the next biennium, knowing that we want to expand this and grow it, and we want to have the actual priorities of Tacoma's multi-generational, multi-racial working class reflected in our politics rather than kind of the same business as usual developer, white homeowner, cop coalition that's boring and outdated.
It's very quiet, too. That kind of coalition does not, you know, speak as loudly as coalitions to help houseless people like we do. That kind of political force is very quiet with its influence in politics, what candidates it supports, the money that it puts into those candidates and those campaigns in order to keep Tacoma a NIMBY town when it's really a working class town that has a houseless population that needs help. Although, actually touching on the coalition part that you just said there, who are some of your partners with this crisis response campaign?
Yeah, so we've been working really closely with the Conversation 253, yeah. Mm-hmm. which has been around since at least 2007. Founded by Dr. Dexter Gordon and a bunch of black and white anti-racist activists and abolitionists and other folks. And they've been working on something similar to this, the community trauma response team, at least 7 years. And that's become deeply ingrained with this. We've also been working with 350 Tacoma extensively, and then a bunch of other organizations to different degrees. So Lawyers Against Systemic Racism have been involved at various points, although they're all really busy right now. Mm-hmm. Folks from Legally Black, Decriminalize UW Tacoma. I think we got an endorsement from the IWW. And
yes, you do.
Yeah.
So I think we've got formal endorsements from about 12 or 13 organizations, and there's about 4 or 5 that work on it really frequently.
The Raging Grannies will endorse it.
Absolutely. So as for these upcoming two budget votes, could you give us a little bit more detail on what's going to be discussed and how?
And when.
Awesome. Yes. Yes, absolutely. So the votes, there's a second budget hearing on Tuesday, November 15th. After the regular council session, which is at 5 p.m., and that's, of course, at City Hall at 747 Market Street or on Zoom, and they will be there hearing testimony from city folks, residents, and questions about the budget. I'll say their budget engagement process has been terrible, and very few people have showed up at most of the meetings, and we've been almost all of them over and over again. But that will be the second and last budget hearing, and they'll take their first budget vote that night, so Tuesday, November 15th. They'll take their second budget vote ostensibly on Tuesday, November 22nd. Sometimes that gets rescheduled. It might be a bit later, but it's currently scheduled.
Why do there have to be two votes?
It's because it's ordinance. It's like any other thing that they do, right? They have to vote. Then they have to potentially move to committee or move to resolutions or amendments, and then they take a second vote.
Ah.
So the second vote is the really crucial one. However, it's important to have a presence throughout. I would say to your point about kind of quiet coalitions versus loud ones, you know, they always say, you don't know how many emails we get from all these people all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know,
no, they would be nice if they would let us know.
Yeah, yeah. They also like blaming white homeowners, which I understand because as a white homeowner, I'm kind of annoying sometimes. but we've been really loud and really present, and I would say polite but escalating, and we've been at basically everything for the last 6 months. And we've been really clear about our demands, and we believe it's winnable. We just need someone in council to step up and take action and be decisive.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there are any friends on the council that might be interested in helping this initiative move forward?
Yeah, I mean, if all of them have privately expressed support. Mm-hmm. All of them think they've publicly expressed support, which is kind of mind-boggling to me. I think it's just reflective of how the political culture here works. But a couple of you, I think, really believe in it. You know, we've been meeting with Christina Walker. I'd say Keith Blocker has expressed support in the past. And I would say that they are two of the strongest. And the mayor. The mayor has said it's her main issue and her main priority.
Well, Lyshka also was really clear that it conflicted with her values.
Yeah, Lyshka was clear on the camping ban. She's been a little more waffling on this specifically. Mm. You know, because I think it's important to disentangle camping from crisis response. It is true that the significant majority of those calls go to people that are, you know, unhoused or struggle with addiction. But we should separate the two out as, you know, related things that come from the same kind of underlying structural problems, but they're not the same. So Lyshka led on opposition to the camping ban, which I thought was impressive. Thank you, Catherine Lyshka. And has been a little less strong about support for this for a variety of reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I guess on the other side of that political spectrum on this particular issue, what are some of the reasons that people are giving not to have a crisis response team, you know, besides the budgetary issues, I guess?
Yeah, this is a great question. So no one that I've encountered in city council, in city staff, among city leadership says they're opposed.
However,
this is interesting, though. This is actually a great question, and I think it highlights some of these underlying structural issues. Even at city council meetings, the vast majority of people who speak, and we're getting back into the homeless thing, but this is important, about the camping ban, about other stuff, speak about safety, their sense of belonging, their sense of well-being, their sense of personal physical safety. And there are very few that just come out as like hard right, I hate homeless people, I want more cops all the time, always. And they're really the only ones that come out that way. And it's usually people, when we bring up the crisis team, it's almost always fund the police. Mm-hmm. Fund the police, we need more police instead of this, because this is turning into a crazy war zone overrun by homeless addicts. But most of the people that speak at those meetings, most of the people that send in letters, are just freaked out about their safety and, you know, afraid of themselves, I think, falling into the lumpen proletariat or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there's very few people that are anti-crisis response, and it usually takes the form of fear of resources being taken from cops.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think it's interesting that a lot of them are concerned about health and safety, when having a crisis response team like this would actually probably improve health and safety, because people who are even going through, you know, some kind of not just a crisis of houselessness, I know that we've touched on that a bunch, but say are having a mental or emotional kind of crisis, who might be a danger themselves to others, that a crisis response team could intervene in those cases in a way that less harm could potentially result from it. They could find the resources that they need in order to, you know, find some kind of relief and hopefully make our communities safer by specifically helping those individuals instead of just throwing them in a cage and throwing charges at them.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that is one of our core arguments. And in fact, Eve Bowen from The Conversation and I, and a woman named Brinley Froelich, just wrote an op-ed in the Tacoma News Tribune that came out yesterday with that exact point, you know, that this is community safety for the folks experiencing crisis, for the folks around them, and for other folks that might need to rely on the police. Because the police will be, you know, fighting crime rather than
They'll be more
yelling at a naked guy.
Yeah.
Well, we have our work cut out for us, don't we?
Absolutely. There is actually one thing I wanted to touch on, too, regarding health and safety. The other thing that I wanted to touch on was specifically also the drug-related issue as well. There's a lot of houseless people who are, you know, dealing with addiction or in some level of recovery, but who might slip back into addiction. Some of them are in a houseless situation partially because they were addicted before they became houseless. I think another aspect of the health and safety issue as well is that by having a crisis response team intervene in those cases, you know, whether it's people who are ODing, who need Narcan, or who need medical services called without having the police be the people who are calling it and potentially escalating the situation, I think that a crisis response team would really help with that as well, because it humanizes people who are houseless and addicts. Because like you said, there are some fringe hard right people who say all of the homeless are addicts, or they're all mentally crazy, or they're both. Therefore, they don't deserve any kind of help. They chose to be that way. Whereas this is saying, no, these are people who have fallen into a really unfortunate situation, and they need the resources to get out of it. So I think on the drug-related issue as well, I think that a crisis response team would really help out with that. And it would also increase community safety by helping people, you know, get the support systems that they need.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think a crisis response team is essential around dealing with things like ODs and other kind of drug-related mental health incidents. And I think it's connected again to this underlying stuff around continuum of care, right? So that must mean no barrier shelter systems as well.
That's right.
It must mean harm reduction systems. And we do some of that stuff really well here and some of it really poorly, but a crisis response team would be really the first point of contact frequently with someone who is either ODing or having a drug-induced episode. The only thing I would say in response, the only pushback I want to give is, it's true that sometimes people's addiction, you know, loses them their housing. I think it's overstated. Mm-hmm. I think there are so many people that are doing lots of drugs in their own home the time that are super addicted and that have drug-induced psychotic breaks. I've known some. Mm-hmm. They just have privilege and more money and families that can take care of them, and they don't end up homeless.
Well, and I want to bring something up as a former mental health counselor, because I did that for 20, 25 years. And where was I going with this? It is so pathetic to be working with somebody that desperately needs housing or different kinds of social services, addiction, inpatient addiction or treatment or medications. And we're handed a list of supposed resources and we know it's a lie. We know it's not available. And what does that do? That's just, it's perpetuating a bureaucracy and it's doing nothing for the people in need.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that just about wraps up all the business. Thank you so much for coming to speak with us today, Devin. It's been a pleasure talking with you. Is there any way that people can reach out to the Crisis Response Initiative or the Tacoma DSA so that they can get more involved?
Yes, absolutely. So we are currently running a petition we're hoping to submit in the next few weeks to the city. And you can sign that at bit.ly/crisispetition. You can email me about getting involved with the campaign at outreach@tacomadsa.org. The campaign is meeting every two Tuesdays at 5:30 p.m., the second and fourth Tuesday. And people are welcome to join those meetings. And of course, we also have plenty of actions coming up. And finally, Tacoma DSA, our monthly membership meeting, is the first Wednesday at 7 p.m. at Parable Books on McKinley. And we'd love it if folks wanted to join up, and we think that people need to get organized.
All righty. Thank you so much.
Thank you.